like what he did at the Senior Bowl. He's probably more of a second-round guy, but there's some pretty good interior guys. John Moffitt from Wisconsin, another second- or third-round interior guy. He can play center or guard. And Rodney Hudson from Florida State is another guy that has played guard. I think he might be a better center, to be honest with you. But I could give you a bunch of different names because, for instance, Marcus Cannon from TCU was a kid that played tackle. I think he's better at guard. There's a small school kid named William Rackley from Lehigh who you can get in the third or fourth round who I think is going to be a starter in the league. So it's a pretty good year for interior offensive linemen. You don't necessarily have to get them in the first round.
But you think bottom line they got to figure out if there's a possibility of getting a franchise quarterback late in the first round, depending on their evaluation of Locker?
I think you always start with the quarterback. And if you're not, they've got to evaluate their own two guys first. And if they're not sure and there's one sitting there, they got to take them.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Scott Brown from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking the time. Mm-hmm. Hey, given what you said about the cornerbacks, do you think that's a position the Steelers won't take at the end of the first round? And what do you think might be the best positions for them to target there at the end of the first round?
Well, I think corner and offensive line are their two most obvious areas of need. And Pittsburgh's one of those teams that typically takes the highest-rated player at their biggest position of need. And Evan Colbert's done a great job with that. And remember, these are my preferences. Pittsburgh might like the kid from Texas. They might like the kid from Miami. The kid from Miami, to me, is a second- or third-round corner. He's not a first-round corner. The kid from Texas, Aaron Williams, to me, I'm still trying to figure him out. I've watched about three or four of his tapes, and he's a guy that could fit in at the end of the first round. And Aaron Williams, I think, would be interesting to them. He will tackle. He's kind of a physical guy, bigger corner. So he might be a guy they look at, and if it's not corner, then I think it has to be offensive line. And I thought they did a great job keeping it together with all the injuries they had this year, but they've got to go get one of those big tackles that I've already mentioned, or they've got to get one of those inside guys. But one way or another, they've got to upgrade the athleticism of their offensive line.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Jim Thomas from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Your line is open.
Mike, a two-part question. If he's still there, what would the Rams be getting in Julio Jones at wide receiver? And if he's not, are there a couple defensive linemen, either end or even a tackle, defensive tackle, that might be good value in the Rams' 4-3 scheme?
Sure. If Julio's there, I think they probably, you know, sprint up to the podium with the guard. And I think he's a real logical fit, and I think they have to start complimenting Sam Bradford. They've got to get some talent out wide. So I think he's the most logical guy in the entire draft for them at 14. And I think that, you know, for me, I think that's where he goes, somewhere between 10 and 18. So I think that's, he probably won't get past St. Louis if he's there. As far as, you were talking about defensive ends and tackles, correct?
Yes, if he's not there yet.
The guy that I think is going to rise up in this draft as we get closer is a junior from Illinois named Corey Legit, defensive tackle. I think he's a top 20 pick. I think he's the ideal three techniques, defensive tackle, quick, up the field, penetrating kind of guy. I really like him a lot. And then as far as the defensive end, you've heard me mention a bunch of them. I think Bowers is going to be gone. I think Quinn will be gone. I think you've got to look at Claiborne real hard. He's an edge guy with great burst off the field. Some of the 3-4 teams are looking at him also, but I think he can play in that 4-3 scheme. Ryan Kerrigan, you probably already have that type of guy in Chris Long. Alden Smith is an explosive edge guy. So no matter what, sitting at 14, there's going to be a really good defensive lineman sitting there, I promise you.
Thanks.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Dave Matter at the Columbia Tribune. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike, back to Gabbert for just a moment. When you say you have to do more homework on his football IQ, what questions questions do you still have about him that you haven't answered yet?
The most important thing for me in a quarterback today is their ability to move to the next level with the sophistication involved, and how hard a worker are they? And you hear me say it all the time, is he the first guy in the building? You know, I mention Matt Ryan all the time because for me, because I knew the kid, I knew he was a no-brainer, even though he didn't have the best pro day I ever saw. He had good skills. He didn't have elite skills. But I knew that this kid wanted to be the best quarterback of all time, and he would do everything he could to do it. And on top of it, he was a tough kid. He's a tough kid, a smart kid, and he had excellent quarterback skills. So I look at Gabbert, and I say, okay, on tape, I can see a better athlete than I expected. I see a tough kid, and I see a kid that can make all the throws. Those things are all important, but when you chart every throw he makes over a 6 or 7 game period, he's that, you know, he's a spread offense guy, completely different than what he's going to do in the NFL. So what I'm talking about is the transition from a college spread guy to an NFL guy, which is a lot harder than people understand. The footwork's completely different. The reads are completely different. So when I talk about football IQ, I kind of talk about this kid's ability to transition from what he has been into what he needs to be, and how quickly can he get it done.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Zach Berman at the Star Ledger. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. What sticks out to you about Villanova with Daniel Jelena, and when you look at the combine, how valuable is it for the smaller school players who can't usually be measured, and that's just players who play superior competition?
Yeah, good questions. The kid from Villanova, to me, is a really good football player with a lot of upside. He's a left tackle that was invited to the Senior Bowl and missed it because I believe it was a double hernia surgery. He played the last 5 or 6 games with a double hernia, which shows how tough a kid he is. He's got great feet. He's got a long arm. He's not as tall as they like. He's barely 6'4". So some people think he might kick inside, but I think he's got the arm length and the feet to stay outside. As far as the small school kids, it's critical that they get take advantage of every opportunity they get, whether it's an all-star game, the Senior Bowl, the East-West, the Texas versus the Nation, whatever the opportunity is, they need to be bigger, better, and faster than the BCS kids, because the BCS kids get the benefit of every doubt. Oh, he's an SEC kid, so he played against great competition every week. Whereas if you're the Villanova tackle or the Lehigh tackle, you better make sure that you put your best foot forward every chance you can. So I really think that the small school kids are penalized at least a full round, by being where they come from, and they got to make that up either in the All-Star games, the Pro Days, or the Combine.
Thank you, Mark.
Your next question comes from Jonathan Tamari at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for the time. I heard you talking earlier about offensive linemen that might be available there late in the first round. Are those guys all worthy of a first-round pick if that's where the Eagles decide that they need to go? Because it sounded like you didn't think there would be many good quarterbacks available that late.
And again, that's my corner evaluation, and the Eagles or the Steelers or whomever may disagree. But I think there's a drop-off after the top two. As far as the offensive line, I think it's real deep. And I think there's 5 offensive tackles that you could take in the first round and would play well. I think Marquise Pouncey's younger brother, Mike Pouncey, could be a first-round interior lineman. And then after that, depending on what you're looking for, it gets a little different. But, you know, the Eagles could still pick up a tackle in the second round or an interior offensive lineman in the second round, but that depends on, you know, how they feel about the corners at number 23.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob McManaman from the Arizona Republic. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. Thanks a lot. The Cardinals have obvious needs at quarterback, corner, and outside linebacker. If you were Ken Whisenhunt and Gabbert, Peterson, and Von Miller on the board at number 5, what player would be your pick? What would be the safe pick for the Cardinals?
Well, I go back to what I always say. If you believe there's a franchise quarterback, that trumps every other need. retired, that underscores that point better than anything I can say. So if you believe Gabbert is the guy, you got to take him right there. And I think they have to be evaluating him right now. I think they also have to be evaluating Von Miller. I mean, he's the prototype rush linebacker, and he immediately becomes a headache and a guy you got to game plan for every week coming off the edge. And I didn't hear you, but I'm assuming you probably also threw a corner in there. Did you mention Patrick Peterson?
Yes.
Yeah, and Patrick Peterson is the third guy I think you have to be looking at because of his ability, A, to play the corner position and possibly kick inside down the road a little bit like Antrell Roll did a few years back. So if they believe, like I believe, that Gabbert's the top 10 pick, that would be my guy at five.
Mike, one more thing real quick. How with the CBA, how are draft day trades going to play out?
Well, it depends if, for instance, if it's already been, if by the draft this thing gets done and there's a rookie wage scale, if that comes in place and it gets more cap-friendly and dollar-friendly for a top 10 pick, then I think you're going to see more movement in the top 10 than you've seen in years. And there's also high-quality players. If that's not the case and you're heading into some uncertainty, then I think it's just business as usual.
Thank you.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Doug Farrar from Yahoo Sports. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking the call, Mike. It's an interesting class for offensive tackles because, I mean, the four marquee guys just had the Senior Bowl. All of them have upside. There really isn't obvious, like, Joe Thomas top three pick. I wonder if you could go through what you saw of those four at the Senior Bowl and who might, I know Karimi kicked inside a little bit, Sherrod played some right tackle in practice. Where do you see these guys lining up and who might be the, you know, in the end, franchise quality?
Sure, Doug. It's interesting because all of them exposed some flaws at the Senior Bowl, and I just watched a bunch of the practice tape last week. For instance, we went into that week, and Nate Solder is 6'8". He's got a long wingspan, but he showed that he was he's got some technique flaws, and he's got great feet. He's got long arms, but he has a propensity for getting beat inside. And most of it's technique, so you got to buy into the fact that you can coach that and teach that. But he's got some issues, and I think he's probably a year away from being a dominant left tackle, even though he's got the height, the weight, the length that you want. I thought Costanzo was really solid all week in practice. They kicked him around to a bunch of different positions. I thought the kid did a great job in practice, and then he had two or three really bad snaps in the game. Again, a little bit technique-wise, he got overextended. He got his weight out over his toes. Excuse me. So he's a guy that I like in the run game a little bit more than Solder. And then Karimi's really interesting because Karimi's a guy that's got less talent than either of them, but he's so well-coached. He kicked inside the guard. He didn't miss a beat. He played right tackle. I think he's the kind of guy you draft late in the first round, you try him at left tackle, and if he can't handle the speed out there, you've got an all-pro right tackle. But this kid's well-coached, tough, and smart. It wouldn't surprise me if he could handle the left side. And Dirk Sherrod from Mississippi State, mostly a left tackle. He's all legs and arms, really long, good feet, and ultimately he's going to be a solid left tackle. So all those guys, I think, are going to be ultimately solid left tackles. You just have to figure out how high you want to go for a Solder or a Costanzo when there's some technical flaws that have to be fixed.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Schutel with the New Herald. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for your time. How deep in the draft can the Browns get a solid right tackle?
You can go down in the third, fourth round and find some pretty solid guys. For instance, Ja Reed from Central Florida and Joe Barksdale from LSU. To me, they're both going to be right tackles. And Ja Reed played in the East-West game. You might even get him in the fourth or fifth round, and I think he's a right tackle only. He's immense. He's a huge kid. height, weight, and speed you want, but not real consistent. Jason Pinkston from Pitt, fourth or fifth round. So I think there's enough tackles in this draft, and I'm a believer that you usually ought to be able to find a right tackle anyway. You're looking for a tough guy that's going to get some help from the running backs or H-backs in the pass game that aren't quite as gifted as the left tackle, so they're easier to find.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We have no further questions at this time. I turn the call back
over. Hey, no, hold on, Taylor, get the other one.
Okay.
Taylor.
Okay.
Get the other one. We've got about seven left, and those will be the final questions for Mike.
Okay. Next question comes from Paula Pash at the Open Press. Your line is open.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking time today. The Lions are at number 13. Do you think they can get value in guys that fit their scheme, either an offensive or an outside linebacker or a cornerback at that spot?
My belief at corner is that both those corners I've talked about will probably be gone. If I'm a Kamara, if Nebraska was there, I think you'd probably make a move for him.
Okay.
But I don't think he's going to be there.
If
you're looking at rush, if you're looking at an outside linebacker position, I don't think people are going to take Bruce Carter that early from North Carolina because he's coming off an injury. He's worthy of that pick if he's healthy, but he's coming off a knee. So outside of those guys, there probably aren't the linebackers at 13 you'd be looking for, and I'm assuming that they also might be open to some offensive tackles at that point.
Right, right.
And I think at that point that's about the beginning of the area where a Costanzo or a Tyron Smith from USC or Solder might be interesting.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Evan Silva from NBC Sports. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike. I noticed you earlier in the offseason talking up Colin Kaepernick's arm strength, and I know he's a real good athlete. Is he a guy who might be able to climb up into your top five quarterback rankings if he goes to the combine and impresses?
Well, I had a chance to see him last summer at Peyton Manning's passing academy, and I spent 3 days watching the kid throw the ball with Peyton and Eli and and he's got a huge arm, and he's a great athlete, and he's got a big frame. He's the kind of guy you want to buy into. And he's the kind of guy I think is going to rise a little bit. I mean, a lot of people thought he's a third, fourth, fifth rounder heading into the season, and now I think he's probably a second-round type of guy. But the way I look at it is I've got two different tranches. I've got that first group of four that I think have first-round talent, and then I got the next group of four with Dalton, Ponder, Stanzi, and Kaepernick. And Kaepernick probably has the most upside of any of them, but he also has a very long motion. He's got some technical flaws that have to be worked on. He's a little bit inconsistent and wild, but if you can work with him, he's got the most upside of those four kids. So you'll laugh when you see him. I mean, he can throw the football through a wall, but there's just so much work that has to be done with this young man. The trade-off is how early do we take him versus when can we get him on the field.
Your next question comes from the line of Aaron Wilson at the National Football Post. Your line is open.
Mike, I was wondering about the Slippery Rock kid. You had a chance to see him in the Senior Bowl. I'm just curious what your take on him was.
You know what? He hung in there. You're talking about Fusco?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fusco.
He hung in there. And you're talking about a Division II kid that's coming into the Senior Bowl, and he's playing a position that's not a high draft priority. So what I was impressed about when I put the practice tapes on after I got back home was just the fact that he got beat early a couple times. He hung in there. He's a tough kid. He's one of those guys that looks a little bit better on 9-on-7 than he does in the individual 1-on-1 drills. So is he a draft pick? If he is, it's going to be late. And the key for this kid is he's got to play all three interior positions.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of John Kime at the Washington Examiner. Your line is open. Mr. Kime, your line is open.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. The Redskins want a quarterback. Let's say they can't get one in the first round. First, who would would you expect them to then take in the first round? And then which quarterback, knowing what you know about Mike's offense and knowing you know about these quarterbacks, which quarterback after the first round would fit what they want to do best?
Well, I mean, first tell me what you think Washington needs. I don't do the team
I think they need a nose tackle. They need outside linebacker. They could use receiver help.
I mean, at nose tackle, it's a deep draft. They don't have to get one. If Darius or Fairley were there, and they're not noses, but they're defensive tackles, if either one of those kids were there, which I don't think they will be, I'd jump all over. After that, you're not probably going to get a nose tackle for the second or third round. A Phil Taylor from Baylor would be a real logical guy for them in the second round. As far as evaluating the quarterback position and what they try to do, with their down-the-field vertical attack, it's interesting because everyone talked about Cam Newton at number 10, and he could be the pick. He could very well be the pick if they're convinced he's the right kind of guy as far as being a leader and his football IQ. If not, and you drop into the second round, I think Kaepernick is a little bit far away to be ready to play for them. I think a guy like Ricky Stanzi, from Iowa, I think he's a real logical guy. He's a big, strong guy. He makes every throw. He's been a little bit inconsistent, especially in the fourth quarter, but I think he's the kind of guy that makes sense for what they do.
Thank you.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Rick Campbell at the Fredericksburg Freelance Star. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for doing this. It's kind of asking, I cover the Redskins as well. Which of these five techniques in the top part of the first round do you see maybe being a fit for them? And are there any that you feel like could convert easily to maybe an outside linebacker spot that could give the Redskins help out there?
Well, a five technique and an outside linebacker are two different kind of body types. So they're really two different types of players. If you're looking for a five technique at the 10th spot, my guy would be J.J. Watt from Wisconsin, and he's a 295-pound kid that got big hands, heavy hands. He could put another 20 pounds on and kick inside. That's how big his frame is. He's quicker than people think, and he's the prototype five technique. If you're looking for a rush linebacker, that's a different animal. And again, I think Von Miller will be gone. It might be a little bit early for Akeem Ayers. And they'd also have to take a look at Adrian Claiborne as a conversion guy. As far as other five techniques, I think they could pick up a five technique in the second round, whether it's Muhammad Wilkerson or Hayward from Ohio State.
So no rush there for them, then?
Yeah, I think they're deep enough at the five technique to wait, unless you really like a guy like J.J. Watt, and there's a lot to like there.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Rice from ESPNBoston.com. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike, thanks for doing this. If you were the Patriots at 17 and you were going that outside linebacker in the 3-4 defense, who are some of the guys there that you think might be a fit?
Akeem Ayers from UCLA is the most logical guy at 17 because Von Miller is going to be gone. And I'm not sure Justin Houston from Georgia makes sense there. I think he's more of a second-round guy. So if you're trying to lock in on a guy, and obviously they need somebody who can get to the quarterback without a lot of help, I think Akeem Ayers is the guy that makes the most sense.
And, Mike, to follow up, how about a five technique, whether it's at 17, 28, 33?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you right now, there's a bunch of them, and I mentioned J.J. Watt. I might like him more than other people, but he's, to me, the prototypical guy. He fits exactly what they do. I think Cam Jordan from Cal fits into that slot, and he's got some natural pass rush to him, a little bit more than J.J. Watt's probably a little more stout against the run, where Jordan can probably naturally get to the quarterback a little bit better than Watt. Cam Hayward, I mentioned, he could be at 33. Muhammad Wilkerson could be at 33. They're the real logical guys anywhere from 17 to 33.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Yep.
Your next question comes
Hill one cut back and complement him with a third down change of pace guy. And I think we've all seen, because it's a pass-first league, that the running back position has been denigrated a little bit. And I think there are plenty of guys in every draft, and especially this year, where you can drop down to the third, fourth, fifth round and get a quality running back that fits your system.
Who are some of those sleepers that you think could run for 1,000 yards in any NFL offense that might not be a first-round pick?
I'm not sure they're all – I don't think any of them are sleepers, but, I mean, Jacquizz Rodgers is a guy that is tiny. He's, what, 5'7", 191, and people want to just say he's a third-down change-of-pace guy, and he's got over 900 touches in 3 years, which is mind-boggling. He's tougher than people think. He's a home run hitter. He's the kind of guy I would bet money on as far as whether he gets 12 touches or 20 touches. He's the kind of guy I want on my team. And then you start dropping down into like the third, fourth, and fifth round, and what you see are the bigger backs, like a Delone Carter from Syracuse. Probably get him in the fourth round. He's 225 pounds, but in a zone scheme, downhill, one-cut guy, he could carry the ball 20 times a game. I mean, Kendall Hunter from Oklahoma State is more of that third-down change-of-pace guy. John Clay from Wisconsin is a 250-pound tailback. I mean, he's that, you know, if you're talking about thunder and lightning, he's thunder. If he keeps his weight under control, he's a lot like a Sean Green. He's even bigger than Sean Green. I mean, he's got that kind of skill set, but he's got to keep his weight under control.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep. Next question comes from the line of Clifton Brown. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike, you kind of touched on this, but, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions about these quarterbacks. A lot of teams that need quarterbacks, but there's also a lot of veteran quarterbacks available. Do you think some of these teams looking for quarterbacks will be more willing to wait and not reach in the draft, thinking, well, if I don't get a guy here, I can get maybe a guy later like Cobb or Palmer or whoever? Or do you think that, you know, maybe they'll be tempted to reach because they need a quarterback?
I would say one more time that if there's a franchise quarterback available in the draft, that trumps all other needs and you go get them. Now, what makes it even more interesting is that you don't know what it's going to cost you to go get Kevin Cobb or Carson Palmer, either in a trade, what do you have to give up to get them, or in dollars and cents. And you've got to sit there and go, is it going to cost me a first-round pick to go get Kevin Cobb? And if it is going to cost me a first-round pick, am I better off taking one of these other guys that there's a little bit more uncertainty about, but maybe have a bigger ceiling? So there's a trade-off, and I think every coach and every team will look at it a little bit differently. And if you have a team that's pretty good and you think might be a Super Bowl type of team, you might want to go get a Kevin Cobb or a Carson Palmer because you need somebody to produce now. But outside of that, typically I'd rather build through the draft.
Your next question comes from the line of Eric Branch at the Press Democrat. Your line is open.
Hey, Mike, just regarding Peterson, who you've touched on, I mean, just due to his size, do you see anyone that's kind of analogous to him, you know, in the NFL, you know, for the, you know, from the recent past or, you know, a long time ago? Is anyone just comparable to him just with his size as a cornerback?
He's a big guy now, and I've only seen him on tape, so I have not seen him in person yet, which I'm really looking forward to do. The most impressive corner I've ever seen in my life from a physical perspective was the day I walked into the Pittsburgh Steelers training camp in 1981 as a 10th round pick. And they had a guy named Mel Blount who redefined the position at 6'4", and they changed the rules because of him. He was the most impressive specimen from a size perspective I ever saw at corner. I'm anxious to see what Patrick Peterson looks like. I'm also amazed at how well he returns punts and kickoffs for his size. It just tells you what a great athlete he is.
Great pick, Flop.
Your next question comes from Tom Robinson from the Virginian Pilot. Your line is open.
Great. Hey, Mike, thanks for doing this. We always appreciate your comments. A guy got on late, and I apologize if you already talked about this, but I got two quick Virginia-related topics. One, Tyrod Taylor, if you believe anybody's going to give him a shot as a quarterback, what his potential might be in your opinion. And also, at UVA, Rezai Dowling, the cornerback, had such a weird season, a senior, you know, wasted senior year. I'm wondering what he may have to do at the combine to, you know, turn some heads.
Yeah, as far as Tyrod Taylor is concerned, he's a pretty interesting guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's got a bigger arm than people want to give him credit for. I saw him down at the East-West game in addition to the tape that I've watched, and I think the perception that he can only be a scrambling quarterback, I think that's a little bit unfair to the kid. He's almost 6'1", he's 216 pounds. You know, I think he was 24 touchdown passes against 5 interceptions with a 60 or 61% completion rate this year. He was the ACC Player of the Year. My gut tells me to give this kid a try. Now, is he going to be a high-level first, second, third-round pick? No. But like most undersized quarterbacks, he's going to have to prove himself, and just because he has athletic ability doesn't mean he can't be a pocket passer.
Okay.
As far as Rezai Dowling is concerned, he's one of the kids around the country that needs the combine pro day in this process more than anybody else. You know, you can't put the tape on this year because there's little to none of it. You got to go back to the tape before that. You got a big, good-looking corner with some athletic skills. But so you got to put the old tape on, and you got to make sure that you're okay with his durability. And then at some point, you got to see him work out and compare it against the 09 tape. And that's going to be the key. The next two months are key to this kid.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, this is Dennis Johnson from NFL Media, and I would like to, first of all, thank Mike Mayock for taking the time to do this call, and I hope everyone either watches him at home or sees him at the Combine next week. As a reminder, our coverage starts next Thursday, and we have Combine coverage Thursday and Friday, and then all the drills and action start for good on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.